Today on Shipment from Shiloh, Ross and I put our heads together to build a Haas Bioroid deck in a segment called Collaboration and Control. Then we go to Levy University to discuss Glacier Remote Scoring. Finally, we put Ross to the test in a game of Gotta Catch 'Em All. All this and more on Shipment from Shiloh. Hello, and welcome to Shipment from Shiloh, a Netrunner community podcast. I'm your host, Graham Carlson, and joining me today on the show is my good friend, Ross Knoll. Ross, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks very much for inviting me. I'm excited to do this today.
Yeah, I'm excited too, man. So before we get into too much, I do want to talk a little bit about what this podcast is all about and why you, the listener, should become an avid listener. So this is a podcast all about community building. I think the Netrunner community at large is a very unique and special gaming group. I think there's a lot going for it, and it's one of the best gaming communities that I've encountered. So we want to showcase that a little bit more on this podcast, talk about how to build up your local communities, how to engage more people, and just overall get a lot more players into this great game that we call Netrunner. If you are a newcomer, you might also enjoy this podcast because it is designed especially to be accessible, although you might not know the entire card pool or find getting into the game a little bit intimidating. Hopefully we can take some of the edge off of that. Also, if you are not the most competitive-minded player, we plan on talking about both competitive and more creative or casual strategies. So there's a lot here for you in that regard. And lastly, I'm very excited to talk a lot in podcast form about actual deck building. You know, I think there's a lot of theory crafting in regards to if a card itself is good or bad, but we really want to go into all the thought that goes into building a deck. So community building and deck building. Just a lot of building. A lot of building in general.
Building a better world, if you will.
Yeah, there you go. So, I've invited this guy, Ross, on the show. But what is Ross all about? We're going to find out in this next segment called Searchlight. Alrighty, Ross. The listeners need to know, who are you? What are you all about? So, tell me a little bit. What is your gaming history, and how did you get into Netrunner?
Sure. So, my very first experience with playing like a collectible card game or a game that involved more strategy than, you know, Uno, was actually probably the Legend of Five Rings collectible card game, which I played on and off when I was a teenager. And I loved games like that that really required strategy, and there was a ton of different factions that you could be excited about. But my always struggle with that game was that it just couldn't keep up with the pace of cost to keep all the cards. And I went to a tournament and I really struggled because everyone had these really great cards I just couldn't afford. Turns out being a teenager and having a budget, I just really struggled to keep up with that.
And now that's a collectible card game, right? So there's rarities involved, and if you wanted a really good card, you might have to spend several dollars just to get a place
out of that
card.
Or be super, super lucky, which is never the case for me. So, but I love the idea of it. My brother and I were both into that. We had a lot of friends who played card games like that. I never really got into Magic. I played it a little bit for like a couple months, but never even really bought any cards. But I also played Star Wars, the card game, actually.
The CCG in the 90s? Yeah, I had that too.
So we played that a lot. That was super fun. In terms of other gaming, I really enjoy Dungeons & Dragons. I like a lot of other kind of tabletop role-playing games have been something that I've always enjoyed. So being Wizard Attacking the Darkness. playing a lot of those games. We did that a lot in college. So that was absolutely something I've always enjoyed.
Well, I think I was the one who showed you Netrunner first.
Yeah, you were.
And I just had some random decks built, and they were not very good. But I didn't even give you teaching decks. I just said, here are some decks that are built.
Right.
At the time, my roommate David and I were kind of playing through the core set and stuff, and I think I had a couple data packs as well. So I kind of just handed Ross the runner deck and built, you know, I had my corp deck and started laying it down and broke down what a run was, and then we kind
of. And I went really, from the get-go, I really liked the idea of the sci-fi kind of cyberpunk theme. Mm-hmm. And I think the things that really attracted me to Netrunner in the first place was that it was an LCG, so the living card game where all the cards are at a fixed rarity. Right. You buy the packs, you get all the access. And yeah, there's a cost to get in, but I think it's way more affordable than a lot of other great card games out there.
Yeah.
And I love the asymmetrical nature. So being able to, as a runner in a corp, having similar goals but very different ways of approaching and different cards available to you. Mm-hmm. And I also like that there are different factions, so having loyalty or different kind of flavor of different factions mm-hmm. was something I found kind of scratched the itch of the things I loved about, you know, L5R, Legend of the Five Rings, having factions there. So that was something I really liked about it. So it just really struck a chord for me. And I came in right after Ordering Chaos came out, right mm-hmm. before the Valley from the Sansan cycle.
Sure, sure. So you talked a little bit about what you like about Netrunner in terms of that dynamic between Runner and Corp and kind of what the LCG model offers. So what are some of your favorite decks, favorite strategies, and why do you like those?
Yeah, well, from the get-go, I've always been almost purely loyal to HB and Shaper's factions. They just fit my playstyle a lot.
Yeah.
So in terms of Shaper, I love the idea of the toolbox approach, finding the cards you need in the middle of the game, and kind of elegantly interacting with ice and solving solutions in the moment. It requires you to be analytical, requires you to think ahead. Mm-hmm. For me, HB, I like a lot of the cards that allow you to really focus on getting out agendas quickly, but also creating servers that are very taxing or difficult to get into. Mm-hmm. It's more straightforward, but sometimes when you get a really strong server going, it can just be downright oppressive for the opponent or the runner to get in. And being able to create one that is just so powerful or strong, the Glacier style in general, really kind of being able to keep them out of your servers reliably, just feels like a core Netrunner to me.
Yeah.
And so I think those are some of the reasons why those decks and strategies really struck a chord with me. Cool. I'm a psychologist. I'm a very analytical, thoughtful person. I've never loved Jinteki. I've never loved Psy games. I just never quite interesting enough to me.
Right.
I really like some of the classic, what I think of as kind of classic approaches. Right. So getting a full rig to get in and breaking through the ice efficiently,
right.
or as Corp creating the servers that are really hard to get through.
Yeah.
Just feels right to me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Ross, you talked a lot about HB. What do you say we build
an
HB deck today?
I'd love to.
Welcome to Collaboration and Control, where my panelist and I create a deck together while recording. It's the live creation.
Which I think is a super cool idea, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a neat idea to try to challenge yourself to do that.
Right, and it's hard to take like your list of cards and then really picture how that morphs into a strategy. So hopefully we'll be able to touch on that a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're going to build a Haas Bioroid deck together today. The purple faction, if you will. But there's kind of a couple different routes that we could take with this. I'm referring to them as all Glacier builds because they involve playing fair amounts of ice that, you know, builds up on your servers, much like a glacier. And if you're interested in learning more about where that whole glacier archetype came from, I've got a link in the show notes to a YouTube video by Willing Dunn. He does a great analysis of the history of the Redcoats deck, which was named the Redcoats deck because it formed very taxing servers. And if you are an American, then you might know all about how we referred to the British as the Redcoats during the Revolutionary War. And then there was some taxing about some tea and some other stuff. And then America became the United States. That's a little history lesson for you. All right, so different kinds of Haas Bioroid glaciers. So the first one, the truest one I can think of, is the Control Glacier. And I call it the Control because you're going for this late game strategy and you're trying to control what options the runner has by using lots of ice. So you're going to create an unassailable scoring remote by the end of the game. You're probably using some defensive upgrades, maybe some upgrades that will cause the runner to either spend more money or have to run the server again. And then your remote in general is made of really taxing ice that is just too expensive. So to score, the runner is going to have to attack your centrals, your HQ, and your R&D to steal some of those points.
Just really kind of classic style.
Really classic style. So that's Control Glacier. Second, we've got more of a rush style deck where you're going to be rushing agendas behind hard end the run ice. Now, Wayland, I think, is known for its rush decks, but there's also some rush HB strategies that you can use too. Mm-hmm. And your HB ice is going to cost a little bit more than they might for like a Wayland rush deck, but at the same time, they're going to be less flimsy, so they're still going to cost the runner a little bit more. Stuff like the Next Ice Suite with Next Bronze and Next Silver both giving you hard end the runs. And then lastly, we've got more of a fast advance HB strategy, which would, in its purest form, specifically aim to score most agendas in the same turn that they install them, thereby not needing a scoring remote necessarily. So you'd be using cards like Biotic Labor, which gives you an extra click per turn that you could install. If you have four clicks in your turn, you can install and then advance a three-cost agenda three times and then immediately score it. You might also use cards like Sansan City Grid, which reduces the advancement cost of agendas, or Jeeves, which lets you use other card combos to gain a click on your turn, as well as some other fast advance tools. So your remote only needs to protect any fast advance tools you might have on the table, like a Sansan City Grid or a Jeeves Model Bioroids. So, in terms of what we're doing today, Ross, what do you want to build? Kind of the control, the rush, the fast advance, or maybe a combination?
Yeah, in general, I think in the current meta, I feel like probably a combination of the first and the third is probably going to be your most effective, at least that fits my play style.
Yeah.
So, really kind of a nice glacier-y approach, but finding at least a couple ways to let you get some stuff from hand, because I often think it's not super easy right now to really just score out all that stuff from hand.
Right, but if you can get to 4 or 5 points, then you only need two-point agenda, you use some fast advance tools, and you can close out the game.
So probably a combination of like a hybrid, of like a control glacier with some fast advance options would probably be where I would start.
Cool. All right, so let's get into some of the list building. First, let's put in our default cards. These are the ones that are kind of no-brainers, right?
Yeah, which even some people could argue certain things are sometimes no-brainer cards might still not always be necessary. But honestly, certain cards you really, really want to include. Accelerated Beta Test, I think having three of for one of your agenda points.
Right.
Project Vitruvius. So those are 3 for 2, so 3 advance. Or 3 advancement requirement, get you 2 points.
Right.
Really standard classic package right now.
You know, we talked about using some of those fast advance strategies, and all of those really like 3-cost agendas, because those are, you only need one fast advance tool, and then you can score it in the same turn that you install it. Mm-hmm. And because they are 2-point agendas, then you're getting twice as many points as like a 3-for-1. So.
You know what? We even skipped a step here. An option that we technically could discuss would be the ID itself. But
sure.
Really, so many of the best decks and really one of the strongest IDs out there for this purpose is going to be HB Engineering the Future. So getting a credit each turn that something's installed, it just really becomes an economic powerhouse.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of other potential advantages for other options out there, but for this type of deck, I think this is probably a great starting point.
Yeah.
We could always discuss changing that, but I think that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, no, I think, there's been many discussions about the Engineering the Future ID, and maybe it's too strong, maybe the other HB IDs are not strong enough, or they're too niche. But I think for the purposes of this deck building session, let's just go with Engineering the Future.
Yeah. Now, just finish out or round out the agenda suite. I really think creating it in such a way that your opponent will only ever get 2 points per agenda, but allowing you the opportunity to maybe get 3 off of something like a Global Food Initiative. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason why HB Glacier decks have been so successful. So I would say adding two copies of Global Food Initiative and then one other 4 for $2. So right now, Corporate Sales Team is one that I've been very much liking. So a single copy of Corporate Sales Team would bring up to 9 agendas for a total of 20 agenda points.
Beautiful.
Corporate Sales Team's strongest advantage is that if you score it successfully, it really does, it gives you free 10 credits over the course of 5 turns. So giving 1 credit to you on your turn and each of the other players' turn as well.
Right.
So it really helps round out your economy. I don't think at this exact moment for this particular strategy there's other agendas that are going to be worth substituting anything in here. Some people could argue Advanced Concept Hopper will help you more because it gives you the option for card draw or credit if you want. But it's only going to give you up to 1 credit per turn on the runner's turn when they run.
So, right, whereas Corporate Sales Team gets you a credit on the runner's turn and a credit on your turn. I agree. I think it's just better overall.
As far as other kind of classic cards, we're probably going to, I would recommend throwing in a full play set or 3 copies of Hedge Fund just for easy economy. Mm-hmm. Jackson Howard, take up another 3 of our influence. Really helps with the control style if you get too many agendas in hand to be able to shuffle those back into your deck or to draw up quickly as needed. Mm-hmm. Jackson also serves a really important function where you can feint that you're putting an agenda into your remote and then force the runner to go through to suck up a bunch of their money and then last minute use his ability. So they kind of have to ask themselves, am I willing to let that go or do I need to run it?
Right.
So you can waste their time and money that way.
So let's talk about what your central strategy is and then which cards are going to help you do that.
Yeah, so the win strategy we're looking for, you need to score out. Preferably going to be getting at least 2 points from Fast Advance.
Mm-hmm.
The goal would be to scoring a Global Food Initiative. If you get that, you're really solid. Mm-hmm. If you have a way to Fast Advance at least 2 agendas, mm-hmm. and you score the GFI, you win. So I would say you're going to want a combination of cards that will let you Fast Advance
mm-hmm.
and defensive upgrades that are going to protect those to really make it hard for someone to get into the remote.
Okay.
So
I think the best Fast Advance card to start with is going to be Accelerated Beta Test. Or not Accelerated Beta Test, what am I saying? Is going to be Biotic Labor. Just something with the biotics and the betas and the robots. Now, do you think 3 biotic labor is too much because it's expensive? It's expensive to use.
Yeah, I often find that just having 2 or sometimes even 1 is enough. It depends how strong your defensive upgrades are. I think for right now, just starting with 2 biotics is probably a safe approach.
Excellent. And a nice thing about biotic labor as opposed to a Jeeves model Bioroids is that biotic is just a 1 card ability to Fast Advance. Jeeves, although cheaper, is going to require some other supplementary cards, stuff like a lateral growth combined with shipment from Sansan, and now you're really starting to put a lot of cards into your deck just to get that Fast Advance, which Biotic Labor, you know, frees up a lot of slots because you're only putting in the 2 and you still get the same effect.
Right.
Do you want to talk about upgrades or ice first?
I would probably do upgrades first because that's going to be part of your really central strategy.
Cool.
And it's you've got a couple options, but there's some that are stronger than others. I think right now, so I think of a couple things. If you want to make it hard for them to get back in, one way to tax their clicks. So you could do a combination of the current enhanced login protocol will require them to spend an extra click to start a run if they don't use a run ability.
Mm-hmm.
That combined with something like Strongbox, and that's a defensive upgrade that requires them to spend a click to steal an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
There's a newer card that came out called Mason Bellamy, who's a SysApp upgrade from HB, 2 credits, 3 to trash, which makes it so that any encounter with an ice when it ends, if they broke at least 1 subroutine, they'll lose a click if able. So that have a several ice in the server and then end that with a strong box means that they either lose all their clicks and then can't access, or they run last click but then can't access because of strong box. You know what I mean?
Right. And with Mason Bellamy, you're losing a click for each ice that they pass.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
So yeah.
If they have three ice, they can lose three.
If they break at least once a routine. So they bypass, or if they let the subs fire, then they can, you know, safely save the click. But if they're end the run subs, then you're...
Yeah.
I kind of like the idea. I haven't really tested him a lot, so I kind of like the idea of throwing Mason Bellamy in and then Strongbox.
Okay.
Now the question is, how many do you use? Because it's part of our core strategy. Maybe we start by throwing in three copies of each for now, and we can come back and drop one or two of those six total cards if needed. But
yeah.
I think that could be a good idea.
That sounds good.
We also can come back to upgrades depending on how we're doing with influence, because an obvious card that's really worth considering a big contender would be Caprice Nisei.
Sure.
As an upgrade that costs four influence, but has a side game that allows you to end the run if they do not win the side game.
Right.
And
she doesn't even trash herself, so she stays in the
yep.
server, and then you can be running into her again
Absolutely.
And again, hitting side games. Now, do you want to do ice or economy? Because they're kind of interlinked. If you're using expensive ice, you need good economy. If you kind of have a lower economy threshold, then you might mm-hmm. need to use cheaper ice. What are you thinking? To me, if we're trying to do a control glacier, we're trying to use taxing ice, big ice that's expensive to break, to put it in the scoring remote. And for that, I think we're going to need good economy anyway.
Right. Well, how about we start with ice? Because that's also, you know, more related to this particular strategy. We need a lot of card slots mm-hmm. for ice, too. So let's mm-hmm. see how we're doing with that. For a glacier style of this type of deck that you're kind of a hybrid fix, I'd probably feel like somewhere between 16 and 18 ice is the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Usually around 17 is where I generally average.
If you're assuming a 49 card deck,
we're at 16 23
is,
right now.
Is 1 in 3.
Yeah.
Just under
yep.
1 in 3. So
especially,
I think you're right.
Especially with how many options there are out there to trash ice, remove ice, derez ice. Or send mm-hmm. it back to hand, we're going to want to have a fair bit so you find it quickly.
Sure. Now, when you choose ice, are you differentiating between this ice is probably going to go on a central, this ice is probably going to go on the remote?
Yeah, you want to be thinking when you pick your ice where you're going to put it most times.
Yeah.
That'll help you a lot.
Yeah.
So, for example, I think Turing is worth considering probably at least... I would say probably at least two copies, maybe even three.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an HB code gate, four to res, normally strength two, but it'd be five strength on a remote. So most of the time you want it on a remote.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't use an AI to break this one. So sometimes
right.
if I have an extra Turing, I'll throw it on one of the centrals if the opponent is running Faust as their main breaker, for instance, just
right.
to slow them down and
right.
force them to find another breaker. So I think starting with two copies of Turing just to see how things are going.
Okay.
The nice thing about Turing is that it's more costly to get through than it is to res at
right.
on a remote. So five strength for four credits is a great steal. And the only way to break it without a icebreaker would be if they spend all three clicks, which I love tricking someone
yeah,
into wasting their clicks and then not actually getting
yeah.
an agenda out of
and
it.
And that's got great synergy too, because even if early
yeah.
on you throw down a single Turing, a strong box,
and an agenda.
And an agenda.
Yeah, you
right?
know what? Let's bump up to three. Let's go for it. We can tweak that. That brings us to 26 cards.
They're like, oh, this could be a Turing. Click mm-hmm. one, run. Ha ha ha, sucka.
Yeah.
Click through the Turing. Nope, strong boxed.
A really, strong ice right now in HB would be Fairchild 3.
Fairchild 3 is the biggest pain in my butt, dude. Like, I've been trying to run a Kit deck, and I see Fairchild 3, and I'm like, oh, I'm Kit. I am the best at code gates.
It's
I have all
so
these super
expensive.
Efficient.
Expensive.
I have. It takes like six credits to get through with like the best
yes.
icebreakers.
Even
I was
when you
using
have
Torch,
a great...
and it still cost me four.
Sucks to suck. I think Fairchild's a great option right now. So maybe start with three, and again, we can tweak that.
Yeah.
Now, we've got some that are more in the mid-range res cost. You're not going to be throwing out a Fairchild 3, resing it for sure, unless you really, really want to catch them off guard and throw them back a bit, you know, a
yeah.
turn or two. You just don't want to waste resing that too soon if you're low on credits.
Right.
Another really great... ice that a lot of people will play is Architect. I personally find one or two is a great sweet spot, so I'll start with two for now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a sentry that can't be trashable installed, so that's great if they're running ice destruction. Great if they run things like Apocalypse.
Right.
But especially helpful because if they run into it and aren't ready to get rid of it because they're running quickly and they don't predict that you're going to have this there, or they don't have a great way to break it, then it lets you scan stuff through R&D and archives in HQ and install different stuff, some of which includes ignoring all install costs when you install the ICE or a card, for instance, like ICE from R&D.
You know, I think that might be a nice way to get back a Mason Bellamy or a Strongbox as well.
It's a perfect combo. Or to start setting up more cards in your remote. I especially love if you have ICE in R&D and they run and they don't care. And you can start throwing out that, ignore that install cost, save you a ton of money. And the nice thing about Architect is that if the it's installing on the runner's turn, which will trigger your ID ability.
Oh, that's
true. Gets you more money.
That's true.
I don't know if three is really necessary, because late game, this will probably only cost them two, maybe three credits for the average breaker to get through.
Right.
So I personally don't love running more than two of them.
And because it's on the most wanted list, it does take up an influence for each slot.
Yeah. Yep. We're only at eight ice so far. Some other good options would include things like Eli. Three copies of Eli 1 is a great example of a generally taxing ice. If they have Paperclip, so the Anarch Breaker that says pay X credits, increase its strength by X, and break X subroutines if able, I think that that one is a really cost-effective way to break Eli, but not everyone does.
And Paperclip breaks it for three, but you only spent three to res it.
Yes.
So it's an even exchange the first time, and every other time after that, you know, you're just making dividends.
They can click to break through the subroutines, but again, if we're taxing them clicks, go for it, you know? Right. I love wasting the runner's clicks.
I don't like Eli as much in more of a rush strategy because it doesn't have that hard end the run.
Absolutely.
But here, I think it's perfect. So we've got a couple barriers, several code gates, and Architect right now is our sentry. I do think having the diversity of the different types of ice is important here.
Yeah, you've got a couple different options here at this point of what you could do. Generally speaking, Bioroids are really, really taxing. And the disadvantage of needing to, you know, or someone being able to get through it without a breaker by clicking is mitigated by the fact that we're using Mason Bellamy and Strongbox. They're going to lose their clicks quickly. So I think being more Bioroid heavy is often going to save you credits on install and cost the runner more credits to get in. So other options that might fall in there probably include like Ichi.
Ichi 1 is
Ichi 1.0, especially if they fail to break it and you can trash a program. Great way to slow them down. I'm not sure how many to start with right now. Maybe just one, and we come back to it. Ravana 1.0 is three credits to res, but strength five. Basically copies subroutines from other res Bioroid, but because we've got a couple, I think Ravana could be a really great option.
Yeah.
Really great example of a taxing ice.
Right.
That's super annoying to get through, but really cheap for you.
Yeah. Ravana gets exponentially easier to use the more Bioroids you have in your deck, and right now we have Eli and Fairchild and possibly an Ichi. So.
Yeah, so far I'm sitting at one Ichi, two copies of Ravana. We can always bump up Ravana if needed. That puts us 8, 19, 11, 12, 13, 14 ice so far.
Okay, so we want maybe
with
three more. You know, there's some ice that maybe looks good on paper, something like a Vikram 1 because it's got two subroutines and, you know.
Strength 5. I've used Vikram before. You have to respect it because if he lets any of those subs fire, then they can't use their icebreakers and now they can't get into your next. And the run by Roid Ice, or they have to jack out, which wastes a click.
Right, right. You know, it kind of takes up a similar spot to a lot of these other sentries, right? So you've got Vikram 1, you've got Ichi 1, to some extent Ichi 2, although Ichi 2 is a lot beefier. You've got Zed 2, you've got Nayreen, you know, so there's a lot of Bioroids that are all in this costs between 5 and 8, and is like strength 5 with 2 or 3 subs. You know, they're all pretty expensive, but you don't want all of them because then you're going to be broke and never have enough money to res them all.
Yeah. We also know that we can lean on our defensive upgrades to help keep them from getting out. The goal of the ice is to really tax their credits. So we want ones that have multi-sub if possible. So, I mean, heck, let's throw in a Vikram for now. Maybe one, I think.
It's nice because it's got that first subroutine that says... the runner cannot use programs for the rest of this run, which means that as an outermost piece of ice, Vikram's great. And as an innermost, you're kind of losing a relevant subroutine, so you don't want three of them in your deck. You might see them too early. Mm-hmm. So I think one is fine for now.
Now, at this point, we've got so many other Bioroids that I really think bumping up to three Urbana is going to make sense.
Okay.
And if we do that, we're sitting at 9, 10, 12 with four Sentries. That's 16 ice.
16
which
ice.
Is a good starting point for now. We're at 39 cards. Okay. We also haven't spent a whole lot of influence. We have 8 influence points left, which we could throw into 2 copies of Caprice right there.
Right, right. We could throw in a couple copies of Sansan City Grid if you wanted more of those fast advance options.
Yeah. In general, I think being able to throw your credits into resing all the ice and replaying cards is going to do you more good in this ice agenda or this ice suite.
Yeah, I agree. And we've already spending several slots on these defensive upgrades to make strong box work, which means that we can score out of a remote.
How about right now? I think we could either bump up to maybe a second copy of Ichi.
Okay.
You can always come back to that.
Right.
I think 17 ice is probably going to be decent here. The other options worth considering would be Eli 2.0. So he's 5 to res, 4 strength. They may spend 2 clicks to break up the 2 subs, which read the court may draw a card, end the run, end the run.
Right.
Now, they're generally just going to double-click through the end the run, so you're paying 5 credits to regularly be able to draw a card. However, that being ability to draw a card is not horrible.
It's not horrible. You know, we talk about how it's so important for this ice to cost the runner money, right? And the problem with Eli 2 is that it's a strength 4 barrier with 3 subroutines, and Eli 1 is a strength 4 barrier with 2 subroutines, which means that Paperclip breaks both of them for 3.
For the same price.
Right.
Now, if they're not running Paperclip again, lots of people are right now, but you've got other options, then something like Corroder, for instance, is going to cost them 5 credits to break all of these. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because it's got that extra sub.
Right.
And if they let you continue to draw a card, that does speed up your gameplay.
It does.
It also has End the Run, unlike Ichi or Vikram.
Right.
So that would be the other thing to consider. So maybe for now, we leave him out, and that would leave us at 3 copies of Eli for our 3 barriers. We've got 9 Kogates, 3 Fairchild 3, 3 Ravana 1.0, 3 Turing, and then 5 Sentries, 2 Architects, 2 Ichi 1.0, 1 Vikram 1.0. 9, 10, 11, 12 plus 5 is 17 ice. Leaves us with 40 cards. We've got 9 left to make this kind of a standard size deck for economy and then rounding out whatever else we need.
Right. So in terms of economy, we already have 3 hedge fund. I think that's an auto include.
And in this deck, I would say so, yeah.
Then there's a couple other options. You know, I think Adonis is an easy one to throw in because he gets a great return for his slot and he gives you money pretty quickly. As opposed to something like an Eve campaign or a Maryland campaign, which is only 2 credits per turn. Adonis is 3. Clearly, Adonis is the best.
Yep. If we're looking at campaigns and we're considering some of the advantages of HB right now, putting in Breaker Bay Grid times 3 will let you res Adonis for free. It also lets you res Strongbox for free, which costs 3 credits.
Oh.
Lets you res Mason Bellamy for free, which costs 2 credits. So you save some money there. All right?
I like that.
And now if we're going to throw in Adonis Campaign and Breaker Bay Grid, kind of the next option you might want to consider would be something like Eve Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You also could put in Maryland Campaign. Maryland's been great in my playtesting because she brings herself back.
Right.
She doesn't. She only costs 2 to res, but you get the 2 back immediately. Toss 3 to trash. But if she's trash, will install it. She comes back into your deck, which will help keep the game going longer for you and continue to give you more and more econ.
Right.
Maryland might be worth considering here.
Mm-hmm.
You also can't really go wrong with Eve Campaign if you're running Breaker Bay Grid.
Right.
Maybe
right.
The powerhouse of Eve Campaign and how much it will cost them to get through might be a little better for the style of Glacier deck.
Right.
Maybe.
I think Eve Campaign's, you know, assuming that you're running Breaker Bay Grid, I think the best thing that Eve Campaign has going for it is that it still has a 5 trash cost, right? So to get rid of Eve Campaign and while you're there, Breaker Bay Grid still costs the runner 7 credits. you know, so costing 7 credits for them while it costs you nothing is pretty great.
Even with Wizard, if they get 3 credits off the install cost, they're going to be losing some credits.
Right.
The disadvantage of running these asset-based economy out of HB is you don't get as much burst or card draw like you would if you use something like green or blue level clearance.
Right.
And if they run Salset Slums, the asset that allows you to remove something from the game when you pay its trash cost, now I've lost the ability to recur that.
Right.
It's worth pointing out at this point that I really think Friends in High Places is a very powerful card we have not considered yet. It's a tech card. Probably going to want at least 2, maybe 3 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And that will allow you to do a couple things. It allows you to get a combination of one of your campaigns and Breaker Bay Grid back.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to recur ice if your ice is getting trashed. Allows you to pull back a combination of your defensive upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
So you could install ice, install an agenda behind that in your remote, you know, in that server, and then Friends in High Places throw in a Mason Bellamy and Strongbox back that were in Archives.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've suddenly reactivated your threat for that runner to get in. The only problem we're running into right now, there's 2 problems I'm seeing. If we add in 2 copies of Friends, which is a decent start, we could even arguably bump up to 3.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of great card draw options. Your deck's going to be running slower.
Right.
You've got Jackson Howard, that's pretty much it.
Now, I will say, because our endgame strategy of making the super crazy remote, obviously you want to set that up sooner than later, but at the same time, you're not trying to rush out agendas. So I don't know if it's necessary, but card draw is always helpful because cards are always good.
Having faster card draw options, so something like blue level clearance, really great for getting you to the agenda you need in hand when the scoring window's there.
Right.
And it really forces the runner to be on their toes to keep up with you.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem we're starting to run into is 2 things. First off, we are at 50 cards now.
Mm-hmm.
So at the minimally, we have to drop 1 more thing. And we haven't spent 8 of our influence.
Yeah.
So we're getting to a point, I think, in Netrunner where there's so many great in-faction options, you can make a viable deck without needing to look at influence in a lot of other locations.
Right, right.
So you want to spend it on the things you need the most. I'm looking at this and wondering what the biggest challenges are going to be. For me, I might consider something like Burst Economy.
Yeah.
Would be an area you might struggle because there's no burst economy in here at all. Except for hedge fund. So if you don't see hedge fund firsthand, which you often won't,
right,
and you res 1 ice, now you're at a point where what if you don't see Breaker Bay Grid and Adonis? What if they get into that server? You now are relying on those campaigns to help you snowball, but then you can't keep going. So one of the things I've been trying lately is a playset of Sweep Tweak. 2 or 3 copies for 4 to 6 influence, depending on how many you do. Really works great, especially when you only need 3 credits to res most of your ice.
Mm-hmm.
So we could try to squeeze that in.
You know, now that Terminal Directive is out, that came with IPO as a terminal operation that will get you 5 credits, costs you 8, so it boosts you up to 13. And that's good. Having played it a little bit, you know, I thought, oh yeah, the 8 threshold, that's going to be easy peasy to maintain.
Yeah.
And that part is, but if you get 2 or 3 IPOs in your hand, you can only play 1 a turn because it's terminal. So it's not quite as universal as I thought it was, but it's still good.
It also doesn't synergize quite as well with Friends in High Places. You can only play 1 terminal card per turn.
Right.
I have tried a full-on, so this is a completely different way we could take this, have tried a full-on operation-based
economy
set. If we want to run them through our remote to tax them out on money, that's not going to work as great.
Yeah.
But if our whole goal is to tax on clicks more than money, it doesn't matter how great the ice is. We tax their money enough that they can't reliably keep trashing stuff.
That's true.
We could drop Breaker Bay Grid, Eve Campaign, Adonis for something like Sweeps Week and either IPO or restructure along with some of those other cards. It's just at that point then Friends in High Places isn't as necessary.
Right.
Maybe that's not a terrible idea.
Well, let's give it a shot. If you took out the campaigns, right now we're at 53 cards. If you take out the campaigns. So
drop Adonis, drop Eve. I don't know if I want to drop
Adonis. I know. Dropping Adonis feels like...
It feels wrong.
Sacrilegious.
Let's keep it there. You know, I did have that in there with my blue levels and my other options.
You know, it's the hedge fund of asset economy, right? It's always a good decision. So, so at this point, I think you take out a couple of your Breaker Bay grids.
Yeah, we honestly probably could take out all three if you're not using, if you're going to use the other cards.
And then maybe go down to one Friends in High Places just to get back Bellamy and Strongbox.
You can still get back. I think two might still be the right option. You can still get back Adonis Campaigns, Jackson Howard, combination of Melson Bellamy and Strongbox, and Ice. I think two is the right call. We also want to figure out how do we fit back in. I would say, is Restructure worth it? So the nice thing about Restructure is if you do either Hedge Fund or Sweep Sweep, you install an Ice or any card that brings you to 10 credits. So a starting turn, when I did this before, that I like this a little bit, well, it's still a potential option. You know, IPO doesn't necessarily mean we have to do this. But Restructure is great because it's click for 5 credits.
Right.
You can get to the 10-credit strong threshold on turn one from HB. All you need is either Hedge Fund or Sweep Sweep, install one card, bam, Restructure, and now you're sitting at 15 credits with a really... You know, could have a great ice on the table.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't going to run multiple servers their first turn.
Right.
So personally, I feel like Restructure might be a great fit.
Okay.
We're at 51 cards, and we still have 2 extra influence. So at this point, you might want to consider, if we're going to have a fair bit of burst economy, maybe throwing in the toll booth.
Sure. As one of our
Swap out one of our ice for that 2 influence might be a good place because that is always going to cost them money, and if they don't have it, they can't get in. That's solid.
Well, we already have 9 code gates, so let's add in a toll booth. That'll bring us to 10, but we want to drop an ice, so I think we should drop a code gate.
Yeah, the only other option would be maybe either Vikram or one of our 2 Ichis. Vikram, part of me, my gut tells me that Vikram might not be as strong as we hope. I feel like Vikram
might... Toll booth is nice because it gives you like an actual hard end the run, too.
Yep. That brings us now... We're still at 17 ice, which feels good. We're at 51 cards. We have to drop 2 copies of something.
How would you feel about dropping 1 Mason Bellamy and 1 Strongbox? Because that's... It's like a 2-card defensive remote combo, and I don't like dropping those, but looking at our list... I mean, we could go down to 1 Biotic Labor.
I actually think... So dropping 1 Mason for sure, he's unique. He's always going to go on your remote. Mm-hmm. If you've got 2 copies of Friends in High Places, I think that's okay.
Yeah.
If you don't find him, but you have Strongbox in play, and you can tax their clicks with a lot of the Bioroids we have, Strongbox will still be relevant.
I also think you're going to lose a Strongbox to a Central Run...
At some point.
At some point, because it's only 1 to trash.
I think leaving 3 Strongbox is going to be really necessary here.
Okay.
So the other option would be dropping from 2 Paddocks down to 1. That's really a personal preference. Or dropping 1 of our 17 ice down to 16, which I would probably would drop a copy of Turing.
Okay.
So this is kind of where tweaking it through playtest is going to make the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. And if you lose one of the second biotics, you are cutting back a lot on your options for scoring. Mm-hmm. If they steal both of your global food initiatives, having both those biotics available is great. And we don't have a way to get biotic back except for Jackson Howard. And because we don't have Jeeves modeled Bioroids in here, there's no other option to fast advance.
Right.
Part of me feels like getting rid of a second biotic labor... You have to lean more heavily than on the defensive upgrades that you have. But Mason Bellamy can be turned off by Rumor Mill, the current that
blanks
basically
unique,
blanks unique
upgrades and assets.
Yeah, non-region upgrades or assets. I feel like dropping one of our 3 Turings down to 2 should be enough.
Okay.
That brings us to 49 cards, all influence spent. We got a working deck.
I like it, dude.
So to recap, 9 agendas, 3 accelerated beta tests, 1 corporate sales team, 2 global food initiative, 3 Project Vitruvius, so a really standard agenda suite. Mm-hmm. Our only assets are 3 copies of Adonis Campaign and 3 Jackson Howard. Our defensive upgrades, 2 copies of Mason Bellamy, 3 strong backs. Our operations, I think, are going to be pretty solid and really an area of economic power. 2 biotic labor, 2 friends in high places. We've got hedge fund restructure and sweep weeks. You're going to make a bunch of money off burst economy,
right?
Which means you're going to be really able to res a ton of your ice right away, and you don't have to care that you're stacking them on that server.
Right.
It's going to really make those ice a threat and help you build up all of your centrals and a remote really easily.
I do like sweeps week here as well as an added bonus because against Andromeda, the most popular criminal, if you get that first turn sweeps week,
it's amazing. Yeah. The other nice thing is that we don't need more than one remote. If your Adonis campaign, you just plug it right in,
right,
or Jackson Howard plug into your scoring server between agendas, either to threaten it and make them think that they need to go in, or because you're waiting for an agenda to show up and it's between scoring windows, you can take advantage of that. So if you really want, you could throw a second Adonis down in another like single iced server, or even double ice if you've got enough.
Yep.
Great option. The suite of ice here is pretty taxing, really strong, and we've got a nice blend of res costs, anywhere between 3 and 8 credits, but most of them are 3 or 4 credits. But our strength, we got a ton of strength ice in the 4 or 5 range. So
right.
I think our average strength is higher than our average cost, which is a great example of why HP can be really powerful. So I think this is really solid. Can I play it out?
Well, I will include the list in the show notes, or at least a link to the deck list if you guys are curious. And I think that about wraps this up, hey?
Yeah, that was really fun. It was interesting to see as we were doing this live kind of the decisions that go into what does what, kind of really thinking about that.
Right. All right, hello and welcome to Levy University, where we're going to talk a little bit about the basics of Netrunner, trying not to reiterate too much of what we've already talked about this episode. But today the topic is Glacier Remote Scoring. So I want to define a quick difference between remote scoring versus fast advance at combo. Remote scoring sometimes is called traditional scoring, which is where you're putting an agenda on the table, and then you're going to pass the turn, and then your next turn, you score it out. It's like Netrunner 101, and it's where so much of the core of the game comes from. So there's also kind of different ways to score out of a remote. You've got rush scoring, which is going to be like throwing down an ice wall or like a binary piece of ice that's really, really cheap, but it's going to end the run, and then just trying to jam an agenda into your remote, hoping to score it out before the runner can find the appropriate icebreaker to get in.
Mm-hmm.
That would be more of a rush scoring strategy. But today we're talking about the glacier scoring strategy, which is just to make that remote so expensive that the runner can't feasibly get in, or certainly can't get in very much. Ross, I want you to help me with this. What are traits of good taxing ice that we're going to be putting into our glacier score remote?
Generally speaking, like kind of like we discussed as we were putting this together, the thing I think about the most is how much does it cost to res and how much is it regularly going to cost them to break in,
right,
assuming that they need to respect and get rid of those subroutines.
Right.
So that ratio makes a big difference.
Yeah.
How much is it going to cost them to get through it regularly? And if you make those things really cost effective for you to res but expensive for them to break, you're winning.
Right, right. You know, I think a drawback of ice as a type in Netrunner is that often it does just kind of break down into numbers, right? Where this is how much it costs to break, this is how much it costs to res.
Right.
You know, as opposed to what does the card actually say? What do these subroutines do? And I think now we're seeing a lot of ice come out where sometimes, it's so expensive at the break that the runner might actually choose to let some or all of those subroutines fire, which makes them a lot more interesting. But
not always.
not always. Sometimes it's like you draw a card, they also draw a card, then you lose a click, and then they all have to draw another card.
Yeah.
Like, they're kind of lame in that regard. But
I think when you're picking what ice you want to use that's taxing, really considering how helpful would this be even if the subs were to never fire in the game or maybe fire once or twice.
Yeah.
Right? So You get to surprise them at times with what you res, especially in a glacier style. You throw a ton of ice down, they can't always know what you got.
Right.
But you got to consider what's it going to do for you long term.
Yeah, yeah. So there's also the use of defensive upgrades. And by that we mean an upgrade the corp puts into their remote that will ultimately make that remote harder to get into or more expensive to run, or both.
Yep.
Now, there are good defensive upgrades and bad defensive upgrades. One example of a bad defensive upgrade is experiential data. That's what it is. Experiential data.
Gosh,
is
what I'm
talking
about. What is that?
It's like a 2-cost upgrade that increases the strength of all ice on that server.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. I haven't used that card in forever. I don't know if I ever actually have used it.
Well, and so, you know, obviously this is appropriate for this kind of strategy because you're getting more value the more ice you have on a remote server. But you're paying 2 and a card, and you throw it down, and it's probably going to cost the runner, you know, 1 more credit per ice. So if you have 4 ice on that remote, it's costing you 2 and the runner 4.
Right. And then two to trash.
It's
not
so
super amazing for a card slot nowadays. There's a lot better options out there, like Sandberg, right?
Right.
Although that's not technically an upgrade, but.
But it serves the same purpose as a defensive upgrade, where it boosts all of your ice strength by 1 for every 5 credits that you have.
If you have at least 10 credits. Right. Yeah, so that can add up huge. And it's a card that we didn't consider in the deck we put together today, but it's one that can make a big difference.
Right. Now, we've talked about the Mason Bellamy and Strongbox synergy today, but before those came out in May of 2017 with Terminal Directive, or before Mason Bellamy came out, there were a pair of upgrades that I think were universally considered to be the best.
They're still really good.
Often referred to as the Wonder Twins. We're talking about Ash, 2X3B, and Caprice. Caprice Nisse. And, you know, if you look back to the most successful HB Glacier decks, like Dan D'Argenio's Worlds 2015 winning deck, you know, he had, I think, 3 Ash and a Caprice in there or something like that.
I think 2 at that point, because Rumor Mill hadn't come out yet.
Oh, sure.
So Rumor Mill really hurts those cards, especially the combination of those cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So being able to tax their credits by not allowing them to get in if they've had a successful run.
Right.
But even before that, before their run is successful, Caprice can just shut that down by ending the run if they fail a side game. So it all comes down to strategy of a single side game. You could both have tons of money, but if they don't win, they can't get in.
Right, right. Now, some people do complain about Caprice being too strong of a card. I'm not going to riff on that today, but I do want to sing Ash's praises here real quick. You know, we brought up experiential data costs you 2, and it might cost the runner 4 extra credits to get in. Well, with Ash, it costs you 2. They get to the bottom, and it says whenever there's a successful run on the server, run a trace. If the trace is successful, then Ash is the only card they can access. So they can still trash Ash that run, but then they have to run the server again. So you've doubled the cost as opposed to just increased it by 4.
So you're really taxing their credits. That's the plan.
Yeah.
Is you cannot win unless you have enough credits to address or a different strategy to address or counter that combination.
Right.
The cards that we used in our deck today bypass that and focus more on taxing their clicks.
Right.
So preventing them from getting into any multi-ice server, scoring server, regardless of how much money they have. So it's another way to tax them, but it's kind of indirect by taxing their clicks instead, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. And like many things in Netrunner, there are good counters to these strategies. So with the defensive upgrades strategy, there are some good counters, and there are some bad counters. So a bad counter would be the unregistered Smith & Wesson, the unregistered S&W out of Honor and Profit. It's a hardware that says click click trash 1 res Byroid cough Ash clone cough Caprice executive or sysop in a server. Only use that ability if you've made a successful run on HQ this turn. So at first you're like, sweet, this is a gun, I'm gonna blast Caprice in her face. But she's not that, or it's not that great because the Caprice already has to be rezzed, so you've already run and maybe not successfully stolen an agenda. Now they're trying to score out another agenda. So in theory, your turn is first click, run HQ, however taxing that is. Then your second and third click is to blast the executive or sysop or bioroid or clone. And then your final click is to go in and score. But that already requires you to have run in and failed previously, which is, I think, why this is so bad. You know, it would be better if you could run HQ, slap it down, use that to get rid of
the trash cost,
the sysop, or the upgrade, and then last click run in. Since then, they have made cards that do exactly like what I just said,
right,
which would be something like a political operative. Or there are cards that don't even require a successful run on the turn, which would be something like a councilman or an interdiction, where you're kind of hedging your bets on what those defensive upgrades are, assuming that they are defensive upgrades.
Right.
But if you throw down councilman or interdiction, they say that the corp cannot res cards during your turn, or that you have the option to de-res a card for the rest of the turn if it's been resed. And you can... So throw those down on the turn that you're trying to hit up that remote, and you can prevent some mm-hmm. of those effects from firing.
And as the corp, you can bypass some of those if you know that they're in someone's deck by resing your defensive upgrades in advance before
right.
they run, and you can trust, you know what, you don't have the credits to get in here, so screw you.
Right.
Right? I don't care. You lose the ability to feint by plugging something into your remote and make the runner decide, is this an agenda that I have to get?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a... trick, you know,
you give up some of that hidden information.
Yeah. Plus, when unregistered SW35 was being used more regularly before some of those other counters, resing it now makes them a valid target for the unregistered.
Right, right.
And then they take a pistol to the face.
You know, I think I like that dynamic of political operative and councilman in conjunction with one another.
Yeah.
Because if, let's say I'm the runner, you're the corp, I slap down a councilman and steal an agenda. You're like, I'm not going to fall for that again.
Yeah.
So you put down an agenda and then you res your ash. So then
right.
I run HQ, install political operative, and trash the ash immediately.
Yep. I think political operative often ends up being a little stronger or more useful
mm-hmm.
than councilman of those two, but it also costs one influence dot for anyone besides criminal.
Right.
So of those...
I think it's a little
I
bit
like
stronger, but appropriately costs
yeah.
a little bit more.
And so. Then you have rumor mill.
Yeah. Yeah. So...
So,
rumor mill. I am glad that they put that on the most wanted list, though. Now it costs you three
yeah.
influence to include.
So it's still strong.
Still
and
strong.
People still play it. And even a single or maybe two copies of that in your deck, depending on what your weakest matchups are, still very much needs to be respected.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the deck that we put together today, Strongbox is not unique.
Right.
So it's not blanked by rumor mill. Mason Bellamy is. So theoretically... first turn Turing Strongbox agenda won't someone who throws down rumor mill tries to get in realizes, oh shoot, I can't.
Right.
Great, you're still good.
Right.
So, but it is a very strong card that needs to be considered as a counter to the Glacier Remote strategy, and is really why a lot of the strongest versions have been really kind of affected or blanked.
Yeah.
It's opened up some different creativity, things we didn't talk about today, like Will-O-The-Wisp.
Yeah.
So a defensive upgrade that if they have a successful run, you can take one of the icebreakers that was used to break a piece of ice during the encounter or during that run and throw it into their stack.
Right.
Now that means they have to find a breaker again, potentially. That could
right.
really open up a scoring window.
Right.
A lot of people weren't playing that before.
Yeah.
Some people are. It's an interesting idea.
I like it.
Because it's not blanked by rumor mill.
Right. All right, Ross, I got a game for you.
Okay.
Are you ready? It's a game called Gotta Catch 'Em All.
Okay.
And that's where I'm going to name a set of related cards in Netrunner, or maybe a subtype, and then you have to name all of the cards of that collection or subtype. And you know, we gotta keep in theme with how are things going today. So today you're going to name all of the bioroids.
Oh gosh, how much time do I get?
2 minutes.
You want to make it faster pressure, make it like a minute, see how many I can do in time.
Yeah, let's do that.
Do a minute.
Let's do a minute.
Go for a minute.
We got a minute on the clock. So here's the deal. You have to name all of the Bioroid ice. Extra credit, name the cards that are Bioroids that are not ice.
Sure.
You ready?
Yeah.
And go.
Okay, so Ash. You got Eli 1, Eli 2, Ravana 1, Vikram 1, Zed 1, Zed 2, Nareen 2.0, Victor 1, Victor 2, Heimdall 1, Heimdall 2, Fairchild, Fairchild 1, Fairchild 2, Fairchild 3. Can't forget
all
those.
All fair children.
Very fair children. Ichi 1, Ichi 2. I'm losing steam.
Doing good.
Dang, this is tough.
What's one from Creation and Control that's kind of like Fairchild?
Wotan.
Nice.
And Janus 1.0.
Yeah.
There we go. Oh, man. I can't believe I forgot those.
I think you're missing 5.
5? Oh, I was doing so well. How much time do I have left? Your percentage.
Time.
I think I'm at all.
All right, I don't think you ever said Ichi.
I said Ichi 1, Ichi 2.
Okay, okay.
I totally did.
So you got those. You didn't say Marcus.
Oh.
Eli's estranged brother.
Yes, I used him for a while in that Architects of Tomorrow deck.
Yeah, you know, he's fine.
Perfectly adequate.
I think he might be okay in Cider, the new ID, he has a relevant sub that they're always going to want to click through, kind of like Evictor. Didn't hear about our favorite detective, Sherlock.
Oh, Sherlock 1 and 2. Sherlock 2 was pretty solid.
Sherlock 2 is solid.
In certain decks, yep.
Yeah. I like running him in sync. because they click through the first two, and then they take the tag. And I'm like, take that, sucka. What else we got? What about the one that limits how many cards they can access this run?
I said Ash. Is there another one?
Hudson! Hudson 1.0.
Yes.
Oh, man. And then lastly, the one that makes you sacrifice an agenda. Enforcer 1.0.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I've got the deck box of him. And
yeah. I mean, he looks really cool when you first read him, and then you think about how most games, half those subroutines are not
relevant. Some people thought about maybe including him when Saphira came out. That right, was the closest I think he got seen play.
The old Enforcer baddie combo.
Gotta get rid of those consoles.
I
know. Oh man, that was tough.
Yeah.
I flew through most of those ice though. I played most of them at some point in my Netrunner career.
Right. Well, okay, so Ash, you said Ash as a non-ice
yes.
option. What about an Bioroid asset? He's in
G-Spile model Bioroids. Is he
not?
Oh, that's right. He doesn't
subtype,
have the Bioroid subtype,
which is dumb.
the campaigns don't have Bioroid subtype.
You know what about that Moon and Knight's deck? What helps to slow down the runner from trashing other assets? Ronald 5.
Right about Ronald 5.
What about the card that Estelle Moon, you know, vastly outdid. This is an asset from Creation and Control that gives you money for installing things, but at a much slower rate.
Alex Talbot. Alex Talbot.
And
yeah.
Then lastly, what's the ID that's a Bioroid? My
man, Adam
Compulsive Hacker, has the Bioroid subtype.
I forgot about that. That's
ridiculous.
I figured
you wouldn't get him, but...
Dang.
Well, thanks for playing. Gotta catch them all.
Oh my gosh, that was fun.
Ross, I think we're done.
I think we are.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks. I really enjoyed that. And I hope that people enjoyed kind of hearing how we put a deck together. Obviously, this deck might suck. I don't know.
It might. Sweeps Week seems cool.
but it might be a really interesting idea. Our goal is to just... today was to try to challenge people to think about why they include things, what they're including, and recognize that there might be other options out there.
Right.
So... I enjoyed the chance to talk about it and come up with it on the fly.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a lot of fun. Well, guys, you can find us twice a month here. I don't know the actual URL yet, but it's going to be on Podomatic. You can shoot me a tweet at GrahamCrackerGo. My username on all things Netrunner is Pureflight. I want to thank Foundation for the amazing theme music, And thanks to you, our avid listener, for joining us today. That's our show. Come see us next time on Shipment from Shiloh.